Oye, oye, oye.
Do you wonder what voir dire is? What is involved in the process of arraignment? And who was that Marbury fellow anyway? Welcome to Speaking Plainly, Breaking Down the Law, a collaborative series that will break down questions about the law into everyday language. Now, here are your hosts, criminal justice professor Dr. Christine Artello and public affairs librarian Nia Rogers.
Hi, Dr. Artello.
Hi, Nia. Are you ready to talk about the criminal justice process?
Oh, probably not. But actually, that's not true. I have some questions that I would like to ask. So I love to watch crime shows on TV. CSI, Midsommar Murders is one of my favorites. Is that how things really happen? Do they really charge in and arrest people and like just like Columbo at the end of an episode where he pats down on his pockets and then he says, you know, by the way, I have this telling question to ask you, which is going to cause you to confess, or mm-hmm. Perry Mason, where he just points to the person and says, you did it, you, in the courtroom, who not even in the box.
Yes.
Does it happen like that?
Oh, boy, you have several questions there, and I'm sorry to tell you, let's take them one at a time. Television and movies take license to make drama, and for many shows, they are fictionalized. They might be fictionalized on real events, but they do fictionalize them to make them a little more interesting. And if you want to work like CSI, I recommend theater as your major and not criminal justice.
All right, so I don't get to work in a dark lab where this lighting makes me look really good and all of the people on my team are beautiful. And
yes, that's no. Not so much. Labs are bright. You have piles and piles of things where you're running the tests over and over and over again.
Wait, so I don't get a result in 5 seconds? Oh, come on.
Crimes are not solved in a 50-minute or 45 minutes, depending on how many commercials. Program.
Or even the hour and a half movies that they make, I guess.
No. So the other questions that you asked were about arrest and one's rights. So let's talk about arrest first. To arrest someone, you need probable cause.
Okay. What's probable cause and how do I get some?
Probable cause to arrest means that an officer, based on their training and experience, know enough facts and circumstances to reasonably believe that, one, a crime has been committed, is being committed, or is about to be committed, and second, the person arrested has committed, is committing, or is about to commit the crime.
Well, so it seems kind of Minority Report. How would you know if somebody's about to commit a crime?
I know that standard sounds a bit nebulous, so let's put it into a scenario, or a hypothetical, as we like to say in the legal world.
Of course, because there's always a legal term for everything.
Yes, there is.
So I come for you, like, if I come to you for advice and I say, perhaps just asking for a friend, what would happen if... my friend accidentally murdered someone or something like that, hypothetical like that?
Yeah, kind of like that. Okay. So I'm going to create a factual situation that we'll use to discuss the criminal justice process. So let's say that Professor Xavier, for those of you who are X-Men fans, took a number of VCU students out to Shenandoah Forest National Park on an overnight research excursion to understand the ecological changes. And Professor Xavier has a twin brother, let's call him Skippy, who goes along with it.
Can I go?
Yes. And
yay!
Nia, you're going to be going.
Because I love the Shenandoah. It's gorgeous.
Yes. So great idea. You, Xavier, and Skippy are all chaperones to make sure no one is eaten by bears.
I love bears. What if I wanted somebody to be eaten by... Okay, now it's a separate question. Okay. Awesome. Bears.
So you have a campfire and you discuss the discoveries on your nature walk. During this time, Skippy gets bored because... Skippy is not a professor in ecology and is not really interested in all that. So he takes off and leaves the group. You and Xavier settle everyone into their tents for the night, and Skippy still hasn't returned. You go to your tent, and Xavier waits for his twin brother, Skippy. Now, the next morning, you hear sirens, and as you are packing to return to Richmond, the FBI arrive. You learned that someone was killed last night and found this morning.
Wait, the FBI? Do the FBI normally investigate murders?
That is a great question. The vast majority of murders are investigated by local authorities. But in this hypothetical I have created, you are on federal lands.
Oh, Shenandoah National Park.
Yes.
So any national park is federal land.
Exactly.
Okay.
So crimes would be investigated by a federal agency. And so to make everything easy, that's why I did that, because jurisdictions, states have their own rules. And so rather than talking about the many permutations of state law, we're going to talk about federal law. And so the people who usually investigate, not all, but usually, are FBI.
What does jurisdiction mean?
Jurisdiction is your area of authority and control. That's
what
that
means. So the library is my jurisdiction.
Yes. Library is your jurisdiction. The law is my jurisdiction in the Wilder School.
Yeah. Okay. But in terms of criminal procedure...
Yes. It is the area that you would have control over. So federal government has control over federal lands. And you have states that have control over the state area. So, and then we also have some specialized courts, like military court for military individuals, juvenile bankruptcy court, admiralty. Admiralty is about that which is on the sea. And that's handled, again, in federal court.
I didn't realize. Okay. So depending on your where you are and who you are, mm-hmm. right? Because in terms of military, that's not necessarily where you are, but that you belong in the military, you would go to a military court, which makes sense. They probably have different rules that they're mm-hmm. held to, right? Different standards.
Yes. And I will say, though, at sometimes if you are a military individual and you are in a civil jurisdiction, the question then sometimes are discussions between the local prosecutor and the military, and they come to some sort of understanding. But in this case, we are talking about federal jurisdiction because we are on federal land and we're dealing with adults.
Well, adults and me. Okay, so got it. Okay, so I have a question. So can they question me? Can they question the students? Can they question the students?
Yes, they can question you and they can question the students, because I am assuming VCU students are all over the age of majority, so they're 18 or older. So again, we're not talking about juveniles. And I imagine they would ask you for your name and your contact information. And FBI agents are trained to get information. And right now, they're just trying to figure out what happened and what people saw at this point.
Okay.
So, and they will probably ask when you arrived in the park, what have you done, who is with you, if anyone left the group. Those are typical questions to try to glean who was around and who might have had access to committing the crime, what you might have heard.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
I heard screaming and no, don't kill me. Okay.
And I rolled back over and went to sleep.
And I rolled back over and went to sleep because I'm Nia and I hear that all the time. I'm kidding. That's totally not true. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I understand that, I understand that they can ask me, do I have to answer?
Now that is another great question. So you can ask them if you are free to leave. You can ask them if you are under investigation, and the FBI will tell you that. If you're not free to leave, you are being detained and they are asking you questions. That will invoke Miranda, which we discuss in a different podcast, the Miranda podcast. However, at this point, all they know is that you are in the area with about 12 students and two other chaperones, Xavier and Skippy.
So I can just refuse. I can say, I am not talking to you, Mr. FBI Fed man.
And that is one choice you can make.
Okay, your face is like, don't make that choice.
Well, it depends on who you are in making it. But you have to understand, if you're staying overnight in a national park, chances are you have signed in, or at least Dr. Xavier has had to report who was in their party. So they know who you are and that you were there. So you will become a suspect or at least a person of interest. So they might ask you, okay, well, then do you feel more comfortable coming down and talking with your attorney and us?
Ah, so it's better to answer their questions then.
Again, that is a judgment call, but you also need to understand that it is different for a short, middle-aged Caucasian woman who's a librarian to say no politely to the police.
No, thank you.
And African-American and other minorities have experienced and continue to experience heightened suspicion based entirely on one's skin color, which is contrary to the principles of justice, a topic for another podcast, but a reality. So, but to get back to your question, if the questioning is short and they don't have to take you anywhere, the intrusion by the court is viewed as minimal. And so they can ask you these questions.
Okay. So let's say that most people probably answer the police questions, right? Especially if you didn't do it, there'd be no reason for you not to say, I didn't do it. I was over here sleeping. So what happens after that?
So what happens during the questioning is it becomes clear that the majority of the group stayed together for the entire trip. No one was alone except for Dr. Xavier after everyone went to bed. And that's assuming no one got out of their tent to have to go and leave themselves and come back and seeing Xavier.
Or do other nefarious things. That don't involve killing someone.
Yes, exactly. You know, so... So Skippy, who left right after dinner. So the coroner is able to give a preliminary time of death, let's say between 6 and 9. You and Xavier were with the group. Let's say you all continued talking until 8:30 and you went to your tent, you know, about 9-ish to go to sleep. And Xavier's still waiting up a little after 9 for his brother. So, that puts the only person in the area without an alibi as Skippy. So the police are probably going to focus on what was he doing.
So two questions. One, what is an alibi? And, I mean, is there a definition for alibi? And two, what does it mean that they're focusing on him?
Yes. So an alibi is when you have someone or something that can verify you were not at the crime scene. You were somewhere else doing something else. So think about a witness or a video from a store or a red light camera catching you running that red light across town at the same time as the murder was happening. Well, that's going to be a very good alibi for you.
Yeah.
That says you were out doing something else.
you're committing a smaller, different crime.
Yes.
Okay.
So you and the others, you know, would have heard a gunshot if a gunshot had been used. So let's say it was some type of knife. Killing someone with a knife is close work and you probably would have gotten blood on one's clothing. Maybe the police ask everyone what they were wearing, and they found a bloody shirt of the same description that people gave of what Skippy was wearing on Saturday when he left the campsite. The police may ask Skippy if he could show them the shirt. Skippy says he doesn't have it anymore. It had gone torn up or dirty, and he threw it away when he went out.
Yeah, that looks a little sketchy. I'm just saying Skippy may have some trouble here.
You're right. Now, let's say they also found some bloody footprints near the body, and they ask Skippy to show them the bottom of his shoes, but he refuses. The police note stain on the shoe that could be blood. They ask Skippy what the stain is and when he got it. So let's say that Skippy says it's from a cut on his hand and it's old.
So Skippy probably should stop talking to the cops right now, right? Because he's just digging a hole. When do his Miranda rights come in? Can he just say, I'm not talking to you anymore?
So he could say that at any time that, you know, I'm not talking to you anymore. The thing is, when he says that, they're going to be really suspicious.
Okay.
So, but here's the thing. He probably should. Now, Miranda is not invoked until he's in custody. So at this point, he's not in custody. He's still at the campsite with you all.
Okay.
So at this point, he hasn't been handcuffed, which would be another sign that he's being detained. We don't have that yet. Right now, they're still talking to him. He's asked them if he's free to go. That will determine whether or not he is being detained for Miranda to be invoked.
Okay, can they pat him down? I've seen that on the TV shows, like he's standing there. Can they just feel him up to see if he has a knife on him or some other weapon or anything like that?
Well, they might if they have reason to believe that he has a weapon and presents a danger to public safety or the police safety. And so if they end up arresting him at the campsite, that yes, they're going to pat him down because they don't want to take an individual into custody without making sure that they don't have any weapons on them.
Which would make sense.
Which does make sense.
If you're going to have to get into a cop car with him, you don't really want him to be armed.
So, but whether or not they can frisk him, especially after they've already had this long conversation and didn't frisk him up front, they're going to have to explain why all of a sudden they think that he is a risk to their safety and the public safety. They might be able to make that argument. But we're going to talk more about frisking and the standard for that in Terry v. Ohio podcast that we'll do.
Okay, cool.
So
that's one of my favorites.
Yes.
Terry v. Ohio.
So, but let's say that while they were talking to the people, it becomes clear that Skippy was missing during the window of the murder and was seen near the site of the murder and has been wearing a similar shirt that is now missing and has stains on his top of his shoes that could be the blood of the victim.
So this is when they arrest him then.
So given all the totality of the circumstances, yes, it would be reasonable for them to do that.
So, wait, totality of the circumstances? Why does that sound like a legalese thing? That probably has a definition, huh?
Yes, it does. Okay. And this is where the probable cause. You asked me how those two items that we talked at the beginning as to what probable cause is determined. Through the totality of the circumstances. So the judges are going to look at all of the facts together and the likelihood that Skippy would be leaving the area. After all, he doesn't live in the park. He doesn't even live in the surrounding Shenandoah area. He lives all the way over in Norfolk, and he has no other ties. So that's even further than Richmond. So with all of these factors, it would probably support probable cause to arrest Skippy. To prevent him from disposing of his shoes, because they probably want to take a look at his shoes, since he's already disposed of the shirt, and any other evidence that he may have. And the police would probably have probable cause to arrest him on the murder charges.
So, okay, so what happens next?
Next time we talk about it.
Wait, you're leaving me with a cliffhanger? Ugh. Oh, that's good.
This was Speaking Plainly, Breaking Down the Law. The discussion here is purely academic. For legal advice, please seek an attorney. Thanks to the workshop for technical assistance. Special effects by Isaac Hobson. Find more information at scholarscompass.vcu.edu.